manages all the court operations throughout the state for the circuit municipal courts, divided into 10 districts. Each district has an office with staff. Also manages a number of central offices, medical mediation panels. Anything before it can go to a malpractice suit has to go through a mediation panel in Wisconsin. Office of Judicial Education, Court Operations Management Services, and the particular agency I work for, which is the Consolidated Court Automation Programs, which takes care of all the computer networking, etc. There's Wisconsin with the 10 administrative districts for circuit court. Besides the district court administrator and the support staff that are in the county within each district, the Supreme Court appoints a chief judge for the district and a deputy chief for the district who work in cooperation with the DCA to administer things. They jointly handle things like judicial assignments. If a judge goes on vacation, falls sick, or is found to have a conflict of interest in handling the case. The size of these databases varies widely. Our largest county, Milwaukee County, has 47 judges. 27 of the counties have just one judge. There are a few counties that are so small they share a judge with a neighboring county. So, the clerk of courts in each county is also elected in that county. They hire deputies and staff. Each county has a register and probate, clerk of juvenile court, and there are court reporters that we have to support to some level or other. The director of CCAP is the CIO for state courts. We provide the hardware, the software, the networking, training, and support for 2,800 directly attached users. There are 63 people in the agency. About, 21 of those are programmers. 21 are what we call business process analysts who handle a lot of the design work as well as providing the training and support. And we have tech support and some administrative people. In addition to the directly connected users, we have interfaces to district attorneys, public defenders, police agencies, Department of Revenue for tax intercept. If you have a tax return coming back but you owe money to the courts, it gets nabbed in between. Department of Transportation, Division of Corrections, a number of others. We have a number of websites that you can go poke around at. If you look at wicourts.gov, the one that gets the most hits is WCCA, which is the circuit court site, which pulls together data from all 72 counties. We get 2 to 3 million hits a day on that now. Some of those hits run upwards of 15 queries to provide the results for a page. We also found fairly early on that a big part of the load on our website was big companies doing screen scraping to gather data, which they then sold, and decided it would be easier on them and easier on us if we provided SOAP access. So we allow them to subscribe to that, charge enough money to pay for the programming and machines to keep that going. Here is an overview of a logical network diagram here, somewhat simplified. Queries coming in from the internet go through Department of Administration firewall, hit our machines in DMZ. DOA only opens ports, specific ports, to specific machines in the DMZ that we ask them to. Typically, what they hit is a hardened Linux machine that's running Apache just to route the reply through our firewall to another Apache server, which is also fairly hardened and only functions as a load balancer to our renderer machines, which are running Tomcat. We didn't feel Tomcat was tough enough on the security front to expose it, so we've got all that in front of it to keep it safe. The various counties, DCA districts, and Court of Appeals districts connect through a wide area network called BadgerNet to our router. We have various court offices connected locally. We have a network segment for our servers and then a network segment for our staff. Here is a simplified diagram of how our application works. I'm going to back up a little bit and talk about how we got to this. We started out when CCAP was founded, in order to support the circuit courts, they were going to have microcomputer approached for the 1 and 2 judge counties, AS400 IBM mini computers for the medium-sized counties, and they didn't expect CCAP to be able to handle large counties. We would just pass through money to them. CCAP was funded by a fee, $2 added to every speeding ticket, civil filing, etc. But we got a director in who wanted to develop something written in C that could handle everything. That actually wound up working out better than any of the other three approaches for various reasons. And so we had an OS2-based client-server application that worked pretty well. We had a framework that kept things working in a standard way. We had a screen layout tool that we tied into declarative structures that linked it to the data. And basically, you could have a working app by laying out your GUI windows and tying it to the structures that pointed at the data without writing any procedural code. And then we had hooks to tail of the behavior. But OS2 got dropped by IBM, and we had to rewrite. So in the rewrite, we tried to address some of the problems we'd had in that framework. One problem was rollbacks. In some of our larger counties, we had had, in Milwaukee County, we'd had upwards of 200 rollbacks a day from serialization faults. Deadlocks in Sybase is the only way you can get those. Actually, our website was running at that point in read uncommitted. We were reading dirty data because just the replication process to the central databases deadlocked with the read-only queries, even though the read-only queries were reading read committed. And it was totally unusable. We had to add unique indexes for everything and run the website at read dirty to prevent deadlocks. So we wanted to address those issues. Along with this, they wanted to improve portability. They'd gotten burned on buying into an operating system that then became obsolete. At the time that we wrote that first framework, Windows 3.0 wasn't out. Windows really wasn't a viable option for serious business, in our opinion. OS2 worked fine, but it didn't survive. They also had been very unhappy with Sybase for a number of reasons, both in terms of support and in terms of every time, every 2 to 4 years, Sybase would come in and claim that all their existing licenses for the applications that they were running were no longer valid for the applications they were still running, and that the courts owed them millions of dollars, and they'd have to argue at length about it and settle on some other number. And even with that, that was on top of paying hundreds of thousands of dollars for support on the licenses they held, which the support was pretty weak. So they were looking in the rewrite to minimize dependence on any one DBMS so that they could look to move at some point. We had had 250,000 lines of code of Transact SQL and written for stored procedures and triggers and such, which they didn't want to get tied into using the stored procedure trigger language of any one DBMS in the new framework. So what we did here is this is every one of these round looking things is a Java virtual machine, and we have, it's a three-tier solution. You've got the database management system, you've got our middle tier, you've got a client app. The software publisher addressed another problem we'd had where with all these databases and all the software running against it, there were a lot of problems with trying to get the right version of the software running against the right database. And so our solution to that was to store in the database the information about what jars were needed to access the database. And the initially, I wanted to store the jar images in the database, but the DBAs at the time, I was a consultant, not a DBA at that point, didn't want to put those in there because Sybase was having such problems with big binary images. So we stored those on the disk, and we had the software publisher just get the list of jar files from the database and serve them up. We used HTTP with that, which was a nice choice because then you could look at what jar files any server needed with your browser, and you could get a copy of it from the publisher with a browser. So these middle tier and client processes start up through a bootstrap and run various services. I didn't list all the services we're running, but some of the key ones here. The way that this handles the rollback issues from serialization problems is that we have, as part of our development tools in this environment, our own SQL parser. We took the ANSI SQL standard for the language, and there weren't any standards for triggers or stored procedures at the time, but there were draft proposals that seemed pretty workable. So we wrote a parser in Antler, which is a Java-based parser generator. And all our queries are written in this the subset of standard Java that we choose to support. We used Antler, yeah. And when we parse one of these, we generate a query class to execute the query, which is stored in jar files that are on both the client and the server side. That means that when the client, we're using JMS for communications because it's a standard. We wanted to simplify the interface to JMS because it's kind of arcane. We added what we call the communication manager layer, and then to make it easy for the application programmers to focus on application logic, we further simplified it with classes called query requester, lock requester, user registry requester. So when they make a query request in the client, they're asking to send, they create an instance of one of these query classes, set any selection criteria, or if it's a stored procedure, set the parameters. And then they pass it through the query requester. It goes through these levels over here. Communication manager routes it to the database server, database service here. And all of this is running through prioritized FIFO queues. There are 10 levels of priority, and a query that needs to run for a user to tab from one field on the screen to the next field runs at a very high priority. If you request a big list using, user-specified parameters, which may run for a long time and the length is unknown, it runs at a relatively low priority. So that both causes the request to jump ahead of lower priority requests all along the stack and the responses to jump ahead of lower priority responses, but it also actually runs on a higher priority thread in the JVM. And this has worked very well for us. Users can tab around the screen changing things and the translations pop right up even though they or other users might be running some big lists. So the logical lock service is based around the concept that in the real world, the thing around which most of this revolves is a case, a court case. In the real world, there's a case folder, and not much happens on a case without somebody getting that case folder and having it at their desk while they work on it. And to kind of simulate that and prevent anomalies at a higher level than a database engine could manage, we have a logical lock server where if somebody goes into update mode on something on a case, they own the case until they're done. And anybody else tries it, they get a message saying, this person by name has had this case open since this time. So that if someone really needs to do something, they know who to talk to and ask them to release the case. The user service ties into that, registers who's connected, and I won't get into too much on that. But that's kind of the overview. One of the nice things this let us do is that one request through query requester goes through the stack, and it is one and only one database transaction. What this allows us to do is if we get the SQL state that says this is a serialization failure, we requeue it. Everything's queue-based here anyway. We queue it up for another try because that message means it's nothing inherently wrong with the query other than it was running at the same time as something else that it didn't get along with. So we let it try again. From the user perspective, it was blocking. No different. So that's kind of trying to give you a concept of the environment we're running in so that the rest of it makes more sense. You have context. Any questions? Okay. The framework routes all data modifications through low-level methods, insert one row, update one row, delete one row. So, when we're doing something that affects a lot of rows in a middle-tier query, we're using a Java result set, which is effectively a cursor, and we have an image of each row as we process it so we can capture before and after images. We create maps of those and save them into a dbtran image table, which gets committed as the last. We insert that row as the last thing in every database transaction that modifies anything, and it gets committed as part of the same transaction. It also gets passed to a tran service, which I didn't show on the other diagram, but it's just another service, which keeps a soft reference to it, tries to keep it in RAM so it doesn't have to reread it from disk, and passes it back to our TRAN client centrally. And the TRAN client will pass that along. We have 72 counties converging on this TRAN client. We have 4 central repositories that contain the full set of data for all 72 counties. So it all converges and fans out. And we also have a database transaction repository, which is used for a few things. It's used for auditing. Sometimes the clerks are concerned that somebody's done something inappropriate with the court records, particularly in situations where there's somebody who's employed in the clerk of court's office who's involved with, in some way, with somebody who's a party to a case. And something looks funny on a case, they want to see who did what when. They get certain reports off of there of activity on the database. And it's also used in recovery. Both with Sybase, which we were using, there's a base backup, transaction backup approach, and with Postgres, we're using point-in-time recovery. Those transaction files come across periodically. These TRAN images, basically, 99% of the time when somebody 300 miles away hits the enter key, it's in all 8 of those databases I mentioned within a second. So they can get a periodic... We can bring them almost up to date with the point-in-time recovery and then top it off by applying transactions from our transaction repository. I should have moved to the next slide. Also, besides the things I just mentioned, we have a technology we developed called STEPS, Simple Transaction Exchange Protocol, which is a queue-based approach to interfacing with other agencies. Generally, the body of those messages is XML. We use a database to store them, and we use pretty conservative techniques to guarantee that nothing gets dropped on the floor at the point where somebody gets confirmed that it's been sent, we guarantee it's going to get delivered. It's been persisted in the database, and we haven't dropped anything yet. let me check for questions again before I move on to the timeline, because I've kind of covered everything I want to in the environment, and I'm about to go through the timeline of how we got to the point of converting and how that went. Nope. Okay. 97 was when we saw the writing on the wall with OS2 going away and started to investigate alternatives, set our goals that I talked about. In 2001, we converted the circuit court applications to the new framework. We had the framework done, and we made the big push and converted the 250,000 lines of code from Sybase Transact SQL into what our query tool takes and got it all running. And we were on that for 3 years before we started to look for a new DBMS. That was triggered by, again, Sybase coming in, wanting several million dollars that we didn't think we owed. Coming up with a compromise where, in addition to paying them 6 figures in license fees, we had to take some of our servers out of the web environment, disable some CPUs on some of them, and kind of cripple our runtime environment in order to have them not demand more money. And so we had some machines that were sitting idle. It made a good test environment for trying new stuff out. It's very thoughtful of them. So I was tasked with searching the field for a new DBMS to use. They want it to be free and open source, if at all possible. Unfortunately, we didn't find Postgres right away because Somebody on our staff who's well-respected and very competent had used it back in the version 6-point-something days and said he didn't think it was ready for prime time. He said it was, you know, it was slow, it was clunky, and the tools were poor. So I said, well, let's look at everything else first then. So Firebird I looked at, one big stumbling block, they didn't support either bit or Boolean. Everything else I was finding had one or the other, but not both. But we needed to have one or the other to interface well with JDBC and support Booleans. Also, according to everything I could find, it did not scale well. So it really wasn't worth looking at spending a lot of effort in working around the bit or Boolean problem. We looked at MySQL, InnoDB, did some testing with it. Were able to reject that fairly quickly because it was unable to handle some of our more complex queries. Just flat out didn't know what to do with them. Then we got something that looked promising for a while. We spent some time with SAPDB. Tested it extensively. It seemed to perform well. In general, it seemed to be handling complex queries. We weren't very far through the testing, though, when it got rebranded as MaxDB with MySQL. SAP decided they didn't want to be in the business of supporting something out there for everybody to use, so they handed it off to MySQL to support. In the rebranding, they basically broke just about everything for a while. It was very unstable for a few months until they finished the rebranding. And then we were able to continue with the testing. We converted some of our big databases, and we tried running the queries. We ran into some bugs. And here's where we got very unhappy with MySQL. We had a big query in production use, have run frequently, and it got a really weird error message. This is just one of the bugs. I'm highlighting this one because it was just the most outrageous. We tried to report it as a bug, and they said, well, I'm sorry. If you don't have a... Well, I'm going to back up just a little bit. I don't know how many of you worked with MySQL, but they have two licenses. They have the GPL license, which is free, sure, but they also have a commercial license, and they really try to argue, and their website flat out said, it's never wrong to use a commercial license. You can always pay us money. But clearly, the state courts, not-for-profit, met the criteria to be able to use it. Well, then they came and said, well, if you're doing that, you have to GPL license all your application software because it's a derivative product of our database if you're using our database. I said, well, we have all these lines of code that we wrote before we even heard of your database, and it's running fine on another database. In order to use it with your database, we wrote these 300 lines of code in a plugin layer. We'll GPL license those 300 lines of code if you want. It's not going to be of much use to anybody else, but if you insist. So we find the bug. They say, well, without a support contract, we're not even going to look at it. Okay, what does that take? And I said, well, that costs $50,000, but to have that, $5,000, but to have that, you have to have a commercial license, which for that machine, we want $10,000. So the courts actually shelled out the $15,000, got the licenses, and I submitted the bugs through their formal channels. And a few weeks later, I heard back. Now, here's the bug. Here's what we hit. Got a big, complex select query with a lot of joins, and on one of the outer joins, in the on clause, there was an OR predicate. And on one side of the OR was an exist test. And that's where it was pointing with this really bizarre error message. And I found that If I changed the or to an and, it worked. If I changed the outer join to an inner join, it worked. If I reduced the number of joins involved, it worked. I mean, basically, you change anything else and it worked. But with this particular query, it gave a totally meaningless, bizarre error message for that combination of things. Well, their answer was, that's not a bug. That's just an unsupported feature. Sure, the standard says that should work, and but we just don't support that combination of things at that depth. It's not a bug. At which point, and they said, if it was a bug, we would have a fix for you in our next release, which is out in 3 months. But because it's a feature request, we'll consider it for the release after that, which is coming in 15 months, but we can't promise anything. At which point, we wrote off the $15,000 as a loss and moved on. So that's what happened with that. At that point, I went out and said, well, got to start over. What's out there? And I said, I never did really look at Postgres. Maybe it's come along. At that point, it was at 8.03. That was the first download I made. We were using Windows on our database servers. I downloaded the installer version, tried it out, looked promising. Having this big idle machine that was web server sized, we were able to convert onto that using, a JDBC, using a Java program, JDBC to both sides. And we started running our production queries against it, and I found bugs. And this is where we were elated, because first time I submitted a bug, I found a bug, boiled it down to the simplest possible reproducible case I could find, submitted it to the list. I'm going to name Tom by name because he was the one who usually answered these things and was, usually within an hour or two, I'd get an email back saying, confirm that that's a bug, I'm going to look at it. And for the first 3 or 4 months, I never submitted a bug that I didn't have a fix running, installed and running within 24 hours of submitting the initial post. I swear to God that's true. And after my experiences with Sybase and MaxDB, MySQL MaxDB, it was totally amazing. I died and gone to heaven. our framework's unusual. Our queries are complex. We exercised some code nobody else had hit so far. So, we ran into a few things, but I absolutely can't complain. After that, after we run a number of tests, we actually we capture the HTTP request coming into our website so we can run a stress test of the actual queries submitted to our server, the actual requests submitted to the server, and get a really good idea of how something's going to work in production. And I can't throw a number out because the Sybase licensing agreement prohibits any benchmarking, releasing any benchmarks without their permission. But let's say it was faster. I think I can say that much. By the way, we still had an identical machine in production, identical data. We actually set up, because our framework is DBMS agnostic, we could replicate from all those 72 counties to the Postgres server at the same time we were replicating to the Sybase server. So we had a machine with exactly the same data on exactly the same hardware, allowed great side-by-side testing. Postgres won all around. So we decided to go ahead and convert. Our first actual production was, I hope I have these dates right. I had to go back and try and figure these out. But I think it was late 2005 we went into production. I know that it was on 8.1 beta. That much I know. So does that timeline work out right? And so the reason we were willing to go into production on beta was this was a brand new application nobody was counting on yet, and it was replication of existing data that also existed in the counties. So if we lost the whole thing, we could recover. It wasn't a big deal. But you know, it let us exercise it let us develop for Postgres 8.2. It let us help test 8.2 and stress that before it got to release, which helped guarantee 8.2 would work for us. So we like that. So that was the DTR database transaction repository I talked about that we use for the audits and the, you know, to support the backup. We in testing it on the website and starting to convert production for the website over, we did find instabilities in running it on Windows, and we're able to finally convince management to let us switch those over to Linux, which we found in our benchmarks Linux gave better performance, and it certainly was more stable, at least for us. So in that process, we had, you know, the four web servers, two large, two small. They were both pretty large by comparison to what some people, you know, the ones we called our small ones, people would still say, wow, that's a lot of hardware. But we could pair identical databases between Postgres and Sybase. We also arranged to pair Postgres on identical hardware between Windows and Linux to prove what worked best for us. And we started using Postgres for all new application development. And we started to look at the circuit court queries, which is the vast bulk of our queries and our workload, to identify any portability issues we might have missed. Every time we went to a new database, we tended to find at least a few things we hadn't anticipated as portability issues. We, you know, because we're writing in our own dialect, essentially of SQL based on the standard, and parsing it and generating query classes, where we can generate calls to a plugin layer where there's a portability issue, and when we found new issues, we could expand our plugin layer and regenerate the queries and be good. So for the most part, this didn't involve rewriting the queries, but just testing everything and finding where there was a surprise and tweaking our plugin layer. Late in December 2006, management asked me whether I thought we could get converted to Postgres during 2007. I said yes. They didn't renew the support contract with Sybase, and they used that $400,000 to buy some new hardware. So besides having a database that ran faster on the same hardware, saving the money allowed us to get better hardware. So it was a double win there. I keep telling them every time they save money, they ought to put 10% of that back into the Postgres effort. But so far, I haven't been able to actually persuade the people who can control that. Oddly enough, and no one has yet figured out how or why, but the month after we failed to renew our Sybase support contract, our Sybase databases started to crash and burn like crazy. It was the weirdest coincidence, but we were sort of protected by our middle tier layer, because when it detected that a connection was broken, it would recommit, it would requeue the query and reconnect, And so we wound up, after searching and struggling, trying to find the problem and fix it, and we couldn't, we started monitoring the Sybase logs, and when we saw the segment faults in the Sybase log, we would just bounce the Sybase server, and they'd clock for half a minute while it restarted. But that wasn't a good long-term solution. So they got serious about moving to Postgres. You know, they'd been kind of pushing it back, finding other things that were more important, and suddenly this was an issue. So they got it done, and May 1st piloted the first county with Postgres, and you know, people were nervous. This was Iowa County, and the clerk there had worked with us before on new releases. She was nervous. We were putting in new hardware because the hardware was due for replacement, and we bought good hardware with that money we saved. We were switching from Windows to Linux on the database server. We were switching from Sybase to Postgres, and it was a new application software release. All in one night they were going to get. So they were kind of nervous. The email from the clerk of courts was, she expressed surprise. Everything just works. And she said, she apologized for not being more technical. She said, all I can say is that the only thing we notice is that the applications are crisper and snappier. She couldn't get more technical than that, but that was how she described it. So that was the pilot. We let that run a while, and we started cautiously. You know, management had this cautious schedule, rolling them out one at a time. Again, our framework where we capture the transactions within our middle tier allowed us to roll out each county one at a time. Didn't matter whether the county was Sybase or Postgres for purposes of replication. They could all still replicate to the central site. We had field techs and tech support staff going out to install the new hardware, and a DBA always had to stay to handle things from the central side and coordinate and make sure everything was working. And we got sick of staying that late because, you know, from our perspective, it didn't matter whether it was one county or six counties we were converting in the night. We stayed about the same length of time, so we pushed to... By this time, I was an employee. They lured me into state employment, another topic. But as a DBA, we didn't want this to drag out forever, so we pushed them to accelerate the schedule, and we did, and we wrapped it up. Started in May, finished in August, all 72 counties. You know, we did these at night. Not a lot of court people usually working late. I mean, sometimes trials run late or there's a judge who's diligent, but, you know, you can schedule nighttime stuff pretty easily. And they had no downtime during work hours, no significant bumps. I don't know what to say about that. I posted, I think, to the advocacy list right after the 72nd county went in, saying that we'd finished that, we were all very happy. And there were a few stray applications yet to commit, Board of Bar Examiners, all those central agencies, but we got all those committed. As their next application release came up, we would make sure the queries all worked in Postgres and roll Postgres out with the next application release. I won't say no problems. I will say the vast majority of the queries ran faster. Overall, everything ran faster. There were a few things that didn't run as fast, a small percentage. Usually those had to do with the fact that Sybase had the covering index optimization or the the semi-join, anti-join optimization for existence tests. I mean, I think that accounts for just about everything where they were faster. Postgres is going to be covering those, so there won't. I don't think there'll be anything that isn't right up there. And I guess that's the end of the show. So there are a few minutes for questions.
Could you tell us more about the process of converting Sybase database into Postgres?
It was actually pretty brain-dead simple. Wrote a little Java program, probably 200 or 300 lines of code, that would go through the list of tables and just two JDBC drivers, Sybase for the source, Postgres for the destination, create a prepared statement for the insert, and just blast them all through with a commit every 10,000 rows. We did use some settings for the conversion, which you would never want to use in production. You know, turn fsync off and so on. We had a totally different Postgres conf file for the conversion phase that we then replaced as soon as the conversion was done with something you'd want for production. So we did tune the Postgres conf file. We didn't do anything all that special or fancy. You know, obviously, if we could have gotten to copy statements, it would have gone faster. Clearly, copy is faster, but the support for that in JDBC was iffy, and it ran fast enough this way. I mean, really, the difference wasn't worth taking a risk on something that wasn't a base part of the project that we knew we could trust. So we just went with the prepared statement inserts. Another thing which helped us, which is unusual and occasionally has you know, bumped into things because not many people are doing it, is because of the portability mandate, we made extremely heavy use of domains. Because you can't always count on how, if you want to store a 500 character column, you don't know what that's going to map to in the underlying database, and there's that may come up in more places than you think, that you don't know what the underlying type is going to, you have to use in one database product versus another. So what we did is we used domains very heavily, and essentially for the conversion phase, we had a program we ran before we converted all the tables to blast all the domains across, and we just identified where we needed to switch a domain to a different domain in Postgres from what we had in a different implementation of the domain in Postgres versus Sybase. I mean, we'd run into that even within Sybase, because in the counties we used a 2K page size, but when we set up these central databases, we found that the way they stored text columns, in the 2K page size, you couldn't have a varchar bigger than 255 characters. And there were a lot of places they wanted to store 2,000 character text text for a description of something. And so we had to go to the text data type, but that allocates a full page.
This is Sybase you're talking about?
Yeah, this is Sybase. So it was... one of the DBAs did some experiments and found that our database was, if for the central databases, if we went to a 16K page size so that we could declare a 2,000 character, you know, varchar and store these columns as varchars, the database was only 30% of the size as if we used the 2K page size and used text. So, you know, even there, for the same schema, you know, between the counties and what we implemented centrally, we had a different implementation for the domains for these columns, because, you know, just going to a different page size let us have a better choice for how to implement it. So, you know, we felt using domains was good insurance in terms of portability. And not only that, but we find it very helpful with having 300 tables and a lot of programmers. It helps people understand the schema to have two columns in the same domain. You know they're holding the same kind of data. If they're both varchar 5, you don't know if they're related or not. If they're the same domain, they better be related. Yeah. We haven't open sourced anything, but I believe that there is a history of if people want source code that has been written by state agencies and have made an open records request for that source code, they have prevailed and gotten the source code.
Are there any of these that are sort of just generally applicable that you think would be worth writing up such a request to get?
Yes and no. I mean, I think that in the interest of expediency, some of the things that should not have been put in the core classes drifted in there because people could... a little bit like what Tom was talking about with putting things in the parser that didn't belong there. Some things landed in the wrong places, so there are some things that are court specific that are scattered around in the framework. But potentially somebody could take the framework and make something out of it. Well, it's all kind of related because the system depends on these query classes. So you need the parser, and right now the latest version of the parser is written as a plugin to the IDE that they use, which is Eclipse. So it's kind of convenient. It's really convenient if you're using Eclipse because it's very well integrated into the IDE where you. When you modify our version of ANSI source code and hit save, it automatically generates the query class without any additional steps, puts it in the right folder. So, if you're using more or less the same tool set and somebody could probably make something out of it. I don't know. But it's a lot of it's related, at least in the core. I mean, the stuff that's courts related, courts vary more from state to state than they vary enough from state to state, so it'd be more work for another state courts agency, I think, to adapt the application than it would be for somebody to take the framework and make something useful as a framework out of it in a more general sense. Well, again, from the start, we tried to stay away from anything that was implemented in different ways between different databases, if we could. For temporary tables, for one thing, as an example, temporary tables are clearly useful. I have never found two different database products that handle them in anything remotely like the same way. So that was clearly a place for the plugin to come into play. When you want a temporary table, you request a temporary table by name and schema, and you get back the table name you should use, the qualified table name to use, and then you have a corresponding request to tear it down. And so we bury each plugin has some implementation of that, But I probably lost track of the question. What was it again?
Yeah, about schema.
Oh, yeah. We didn't want to use any kind of assignment of those serial numbers, well, partly because we prefer natural keys, so we weren't putting one of these in every table. We only used a uniqueness number where there wasn't a natural, a meaningful set of columns that uniquely identified a row. But even there, what we chose to do was to manage that ourselves with either, if it was a child, we kept a counter last used in the parent table, and we have a seek knows table for the top level ones that we assign, and we update and read those. The reason we didn't go with the approach of taking the max value is it seems every time we've moved to a new database, Sybase wasn't the first database we used either under the old platform. Every time we start using a database, it doesn't support the optimization of scanning backwards on an index to get to max. And I think that was true of when we very first started using Postgres. I think it was added very shortly after we started looking at it. But I could be remembering that wrong. But because not all databases had that optimization, that was one of the reasons that drove us to assigning the sequence numbers ourselves. Well, you know, like I said, there was a small percentage of queries that didn't perform as well. Some of them we had to rewrite in funny ways, like using an inner join rather than exist test followed by a distinct to collapse the rows. Or
that's how you went to writing it? Or
we did have to a few queries we had to go to that technique. There was one query that, try as we might, we could not find a way to get it within the 20-second timeout our website allowed. It wasn't one that was run very often, so what the web developers did essentially was to run it in pieces and then, you know, take the results from each chunk as they came back, and that solved that problem. There was only one query out of, we got 8,700 of them, one query that we had to do something that extreme for. The other thing was the one contribution I've made to the Postgres source was we were actually in production for a while where we started getting some weird errors in the replication, which turned out to be because Sybase was using standard conforming string literals and Postgres wasn't, and when a value got replicated which had a backslash in it, we got errors on the Postgres side and had to manually tinker around it. And, you know, doing due diligence, I saw there was a to-do item to implement standard conforming strings, and there'd already been some work to put in a warning, I believe. It was already done, which made it, looking at what was done for that, I went to my boss and I said, you know, I think I can implement this to-do in about 2 days' work, or I can spend a week working around the absence of it. Can I do this? And so they said, go ahead. And that's pretty much the only thing I committed. I don't know how much you guys had to rework it after I submitted that, but we were in 8.1 and we needed this desperately, so I wrote a patch against 8.1 that we put in production and I submitted it, and you know, I was very pleasantly surprised. It's like, should I readjust this so it applies cleanly against 8.2? And Bruce was like, I don't know, I'll take care of that. And I said, well, what about backups? I'll worry about that. So they were very nice about taking it, which was great, because I'd have been in a little bit over my head there. I've done a lot of work with parsers, and you know, the funny thing is the two-day estimate was I'd never seen Flex or Bison, so I figured I need a day to learn that, and then a day to make the change. And that was pretty much how it went.
Yeah, I'd like to make a comment also, Kevin has really been a model user from the developer side, in that he has been, you know, willing to boil down his problems for
Well, thank you. Anything else? Okay.